as promised on the Comcast Business Hotline, good friend of the program, he's Marcus Hayes. What's up, Marcus Hayes from Philly.com?
Hi, Joe. How are you feeling today?
I was doing great until I heard some callers and the whole LeBron thing, and they don't want him here because the Sixers want to win organically. Whatever. Let's talk about the Celtics series tomorrow night. Celtics have moved on from Milwaukee, although they're missing Kyrie. You know, Gordon Hayward hardly got a few minutes with the team this year. Sixers rolling along. What matchups do you think the Sixers can exploit in this series?
Well, anybody who's guarding Joel Embiid is an advantage. I mean, he's just unstoppable. And, you know, I think it was Bob Ford, one of my colleagues at the Inquirer and Philly.com, asked Brett Brown before game five, you know, if you guys win tonight, isn't it great for Joel to be able to get back in shape, get his offensive rhythm back? And, of course, Brown was like, look, you know, I can't talk about what if we win, but it is a huge benefit. Joel Embiid is the single most dominant non-perimeter player in the league right now, and I'm not sure it's close. And he's just a really wonderful player to watch play, and I know that's saying a lot considering what Anthony Davis has done over the last 20, 25 games without Boogie Cousins. But I don't know that he affects the game the way that Joel does, and maybe it's a whole team wide dynamic that I'm seeing, and maybe I just see him more than I see Anthony, but you know, it's a pretty big interior advantage, but I'm not sure there's another advantage to be had. I would love to see what they plan to do against Ben Simmons, and if they're going to, you know, put Marcus Smart on him at times. I know that's a size disadvantage, or what exactly they're going to do. It's going to be a fun series to watch. I mean, I think Brad Stevens is probably the best coach in the league right now. And Brett Brown is certainly up there and probably should be coach of the year. But, you know, when it comes to matchups with a team that's as dynamic as the Celtics, even without Jaylen Brown, who apparently is doubtful for tomorrow's game with a hamstring injury suffered yesterday in the closeout game, it's really fun to watch him shuffle those guys in and out.
Yeah, Marcus, you mentioned Jaylen Brown with the hamstring injury. Who knows when he's going to come back? Sometimes those take, a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks to heal. How much will that affect the Celtics, do you think?
Well, he's kind of one of those sort of, I don't know, he's one of those guys that you can't account for because his athleticism is such that you can't match it. You know, they don't have a defender who can stay. Almost nobody has a defender who can stay with Jaylen Brown when Jaylen Brown is aggressive and when he's right. He's just a freakish athlete. He's a lot like Victor Oladipo. Like one guy can't guard him. But like Victor, you know, 2 years ago, I guess it was, he has holes in his game. You know, he's not a great pull-up jump shooter. He doesn't finish as strong as he will, that sort of thing. So, you know, Jaylen Brown is a special guy and kind of a difference maker, even without Kyrie and Gordon Hayward.
Marcus Hayes on the Comcast Business Hotline. Sixers have had 5 days off. The Celtics played last night, 7-game series. Who has the advantage, rest versus rust?
Well, you know, I'm not sure that these kids get rusty. You know what I mean? They seem to hit the ground running every time. There's a youth. There's the one of the benefits of youth is that, you know, you don't need rhythm. You don't have habits really. So I think it certainly benefits the Sixers versus the Celtics, who, you know, probably a little bit older and a little bit certainly more run down at this point. And you know, they just played a very tough series. They played a very physical series.
Yeah.
And it's gonna be interesting to see how they feel coming off that series. I think game one will be different from games, you know, two through six or seven, however many it goes. I think they're juiced right now that they won, and they'll be back home in Boston. You know, that's a pretty big advantage. That place is a hard place to play.
Miami, that series was very physical. Do you expect a physical series this time around?
You know, I think the physicality of that series was amplified because the Sixers hadn't seen that sort of thing before. But that wasn't a physical series. If you watch LeBron today, if you watch the bruising that happened in that game today, if you watch game 7, LeBron closing those guys out with, what, 48 points, I mean, that's a physical series. I mean, it was a good taste for the Sixers of what playoff basketball can be, but it was nothing like, you know, what the Celtics went through and what LeBron went through. I mean, it was just, there were cheap shots. It was a cheap series, the Miami series, but it wasn't nearly as physical as what they'll face, you know, from here on out, especially since they are a playoff ingenue, since they're like a newcomer. Most of them don't know what it takes. I mean, the only guys who didn't really flinch in those in the first round playoff series were J.J. Redick and Marco Bellinelli, of all people, you know, the outside perimeter shooters, because they're used to being clutched and grabbed. They're used to shooting through contact. They're used to finishing hard. They're used to not being allowed to finish. They're used to being fouled at the rim because you don't, you know, in playoff basketball, you don't let little guys like that, you don't let guys that aren't Skywalkers finish because you don't think that they'll be able to finish through contact. So those guys were unfazed by it. I'm not saying it affected the other Sixers a whole lot, but I don't think JJ or Marco, who, you know, was, you know, part of several very physical series, I don't think he is, they were fazed by it whatsoever.
Marcus Hayes on the Comcast Business Hotline. Very inconsistent from three, Marcus. A couple games, 18 three-pointers, and then a couple 7 for 36 and 31, respectively. How do they become more consistent, you know, from the with the long ball, or is it just one of those, you know, you live by it, you die by it?
I'm not sure they will, quite frankly. The big issue for them, when they shoot the three well, it's a byproduct of excellent screening, a little bit about lazy defense on the other end, and people not rotating, especially in Robert Covington's case. He's not a guy that really gets off on his own. He's kind of a hockey assist guy. So Bellinelli and JJ, you know, coming off screens, they haven't been allowed to come off screens as cleanly as they were in the regular season. But this is, again, nothing new. I'm not sure that the Sixers have, you know, this is where Ben Simmons not being able to shoot a three-pointer, or Marco Fultz or TJ McConnell, they're just going to leave them open, and they're going to sell out on the other guys. And that's just the way it's going to be until they develop games where they develop the type of game where they can make you pay. That's just the way it's going to be. And we knew this coming in. Brett Brown knew it coming in. And anyone who didn't anticipate it being like this just kind of wasn't paying attention to playoff basketball the last couple of years. You know, the difference between, you know, a guy like Kevin Love, or a guy like J.R. Smith, or a guy like Kyle Korver is size and release, and the ability to create your own shot and maybe in JR's situation. But again, they're a complete team. They run, they defend spectacularly well, considering how young they are and how few games two of their three primary defenders, Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, have played. I mean, that is by far the most remarkable thing about this team for me, is the sophistication with which Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons play defense.
Who do you
Robert
like?
Covington. Oh, I like the Sixers because of the rest, probably in six. And it would be great to have LeBron come into town and maybe as a preview of what we see for the next 3 years.
Yeah, let's hope so. We have a faction, of course, who are on the other side of that. But let's switch gears a little bit to football. Not a lot of chatter about the Eagles draft this year. You know, they won the Super Bowl. They picked 32nd. They dropped to 52, then to 49. What did you think? What were your overall impressions of what the Eagles did this weekend?
Well, I just wrote a column that'll appear on Philly.com probably within the next couple of hours, if it's not too badly written and my editor can get through it. I just wrote a column about how this draft was a lot about last year.
Yes, I've been talking about that.
Yeah, when you traded, you know, the third round pick and Jordan Matthews for Ronald Darby, when you traded your fourth round pick for Jay Ajayi, you know, when you use the second round pick on a red shirt for Sidney Jones,
I mean,
that's how you build a franchise. And we forget this time last year, Mike Sielski from Philly.com was comparing Doug Peterson to a potted plant because he thought he had no input into how the team was being formed coming off a 7-9 season after a really good start. Joe Douglas and Andy Weidel, the player personnel director and assistant, that was the first draft last year that they were involved in as Howie's assistant. They'd been there for a few months already, but, you know, soup to nuts, that was their first draft. And the rest of the player personnel decisions, you know. I'm pretty sure Joe Douglas was involved in the acquisition of Timmy Jernigan and when he was in Baltimore.
Yep.
And when they traded a pick to get Jernigan, that was a Joe Douglas-endorsed move. So all of that sort of comes together. I know it wasn't a very sexy draft. You know, they drafted a tight end named Dallas, which will be the most popular Dallas entity in the history of Philadelphia, I'm sure. But if you look at what happened, you know, Brett Celek was not a Pro Bowl player when Zach Ertz got drafted. Zach Ertz, who was, you know, given every chance to succeed, I believe he was Chip's second pick, given every chance to succeed, only caught 35 passes and played about 40% of the snaps as a rookie with Brent Celek, who wasn't Zach Ertz. So, you know, I don't know how much we're going to see from that, but that was just a long-winded way of saying trading back and acquiring a second-round pick for next year, that's the kind of thing that Sam Hinkie did. Sam Hinkie was a lot of things that I didn't approve of or didn't endorse, but he understood the value of draft picks and players and, you know, salary versus output. He was really, really good at that stuff. And Sam Hinkie would have been proud of Howie on Thursday night, trading this year's 32nd overall pick, dropping back, I think, 20 slots,
yep,
and getting a second-round pick next year, you know, for a team that has all its starters. There are no needs right now. You need depth. And you're going to need production from guys that weren't as productive in the past. But you trade back, you get two things. You get a second-round pick for next year, and you get money to re-sign Darren Sproles. So that's like having a draft pick, you know? So,
yeah, right.
So, since Howie Roseman and Joe Douglas and Andy Weidel became sort of a troika, kind of a three-headed monster on top of this organization, they haven't done a lot of things wrong. You know, they work well together. I think Howie respects his lieutenants. I think his lieutenants are not only good at their jobs, but assertive, and they feel like they can be assertive. This is the kind of thing that really works well. It reminds me of Pat Gillick with Ruben Amaro Jr.
Yeah.
And Mike Arbuckle, and Ed Wade with Mike Arbuckle, and to a lesser degree, Ruben Amaro Jr. When the Phillies got good, they got good because they had continuity, and they had a philosophy and a specific vision. And I think that's what the Eagles have done here. I think they finally kind of know what they're doing without a coach interfering or any sort of infighting or anything like that, which has soiled them. I got here in 95. Their front office has been a mess except for like one or two seasons when Tom Modrak was in charge of it. It's been a mess. And he's the one that built the team that went to the 2004 Super Bowl.
Yeah.
He and Ray Rhodes. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a good time to be an Eagles fan because the brain trust and Peterson and his staff, you know, who, you know, are involved in every pick. They, you know, they grade guys as well. I mean, Frank Reich's the reason Carson Wentz was so highly regarded. Peterson and his staff, along with this you know, brain trust, they're very, very invested in the future of the team, not just the present. They want the team to be good for 5 or 10 years. Well, maybe 3 to 5 years in the NFL. You really can't project past that.
Marcus Hayes on the Comcast Business Hotline. Marcus, before I let you go, I got to ask you about the Thunder from down under, the 7th-round pick, Jordan Mailata. Your thoughts on him?
Well, you know, you got to put somebody on your practice squad, right?
That's true. Very true.
Football's hard. I mean, football's really hard. I mean, it's kind of like teaching someone. It's kind of like having somebody walk in off the street, teaching an offensive line position. It's like having somebody walk in off the street and say, hey, I want to be a dancer. You have no idea how well this person is going to be able to dance just because you saw them walk in off the street.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You don't know how much they're willing to work. You don't know how much they're willing. He's going to have to change his body. I mean, we're probably 2 or 3 years from seeing whether or not he's a viable offensive lineman. And I'm a huge champion of offensive linemen. I think they are the least appreciated entity in sports, you know, as far as like intelligence and understanding their job and their role. I mean, you kind of need a PhD in football to be a really good, especially interior offensive lineman. And these sorts of moves tend to trivialize it, you know. I've seen so many guys try to play offensive line, convert from defensive line,
sure,
or tight end, or, you know, join the sport or whatever, and just, oh, I'm going to play offensive. It's very, very involved. It's kind of like sumo wrestling. These guys train for years to be sumo wrestlers. You need to train for years to understand your body and leverage and things like that to be an offensive lineman. Then you have to understand the concepts. So, and then you have to be able to do it in real time with these, you know, these monsters like Michael Bennett or Fletcher Cox bearing down on you. It's a thankless job. I really appreciate it a lot more than I did before I knew as much as I know about football now.
Yeah, certainly tough to master. Marcus Hayes, appreciate your time, my friend. We'll check out your article about how this draft affected the Super Bowl champions and, you know, what Howie and Joe did and how good they are as an executive branch. I appreciate it, pal. We'll catch you down the road.
Okay, I'm heading to Boston. I'll see you later.
Oh, enjoy yourself, man. Bring home a winner. All right, that was Marcus Hayes on the Comcast Business Hotline.